So let's begin our consideration of this subject, obligatory duties of life, by considering a quote from the writings of a wise man who said, I quote, "What then is the panacea, finally, the royal talisman? It is duty, selflessness. Duty persistently followed is the highest yoga, and is better than mantrams or any postures or any other thing," unquote. So we are all acquainted with the rights of man and the individual rights that we have. But do we know the duties which each one has to perform? And even if we know it intellectually and pay lip service to it, do we actually practice it? Do we actually perform these duties which are mandatory for us to perform? Now, we should first examine the underlying views of life and the basic ideas which exist beneath these two ideas of rights and duties. If we consider rights alone and examine it, we see that it is self-centric. It is centered around that one particular person and his or her assertion of rights. It is individualistic, and there is a certain fear that one has to safeguard one's rights and one has to make sure that there is that power to exercise that particular right. So it appears that this idea of assertion of rights and neglect of duty. Why neglect of duty? Even the very idea of assertion of rights and fighting for one's rights comes from a certain idea of separateness. Separateness of one individual from others and the whole of existence. And secondly, if that is the first idea, the idea of separateness, secondly, we find it also springs from the idea that one has to actually do something to safeguard one's rights. One has to assert one's rights and work towards it in order to safeguard it. In other words, it means that it falls upon oneself to safeguard his rights, and that the universe is without order. It happens by accident and chance, and whoever is mighty and whoever can assert his rights and whoever has the power to do so can obtain the fruits of exercising one's rights. So there seems to be these two ideas, the idea of separateness and the idea of or the ignorance of the basic underlying order in universe. On the second hand, if we consider duties, it arises from the idea of one person's obligation towards another or a set of people or the whole of the nature, and this is resting on the idea of interconnectedness of beings. In the rights, we find there is the idea of separateness. In the duties, we find that there is an admission of all beings interconnected, each one being interconnected with another, and also it rests upon the fact that there is a certain order in universe. There is a certain law in the universe which implies that each man has obligation towards other beings around him and to himself, and these are the duties which one has to perform. On the one hand, the person who asserts his rights wants to attain peace and happiness and make progress through a self-centered approach. And on the other hand, one who diligently involves himself in performing his duties will find the importance of self-restraint, self-abnegation, self-control and sacrifice. He finds, the one who performs duties diligently, he understands that his own happiness, his or her own happiness, invariably depends upon the happiness of everybody around him or her. He also understands that what is put in light on the path very beautifully as to work for self is to work for disappointment. So he recognizes this and finds that there is a basic interconnectedness and interdependence of all beings, which means that anything that we do, anything that we speak, and anything that we think and feel, our emotions, thoughts, all of these are not lost. All of these make an impression somewhere in some part of nature, and that aspect of nature in which the impression is made runs through the whole of the universe and therefore affects all beings. So this scientific basis is understood by one who sees the importance of performing duties, this basic interconnectedness. Whatever we think, whatever we feel, what we speak and how we behave and how we, our actions are not lost but make an impression, and these impressions are reflected back upon all beings. So look at the responsibility that this idea of interconnectedness brings to us. The responsibility is that the moral progress of whole of humanity or whole of mankind depends on each individual's moral state. Each individual's moral state. And furthering the same idea, we find that since this is the case, each person is held responsible for the condition of the whole. Each person is held responsible for the condition of the whole. So we find that our virtue and our vice is reflected in the society and swells up the bad qualities in others around us, or suppresses the bad qualities and flowers out the beautiful, noble and altruistic qualities in others around us. It depends on each person's moral nature. So such is the intricate, interdependent nature of the world in which we live. The other day we were recollecting the allegory of Indra's web, a cosmic web known as Indra's web, wherein at each junction of the threads a beautiful gem is placed, and the beauty of this web is that each gem reflects all other gems in that web. In other words, it shows the character, or it shows the nature of the world in which we live, in which each being reflects itself and its nature and its character on all other beings, and is in turn reflected by all others. This interconnectedness the ancients understood very well and very deeply and very profoundly, and therefore they always insisted on performance of duties and said that once duties are performed, rights are automatically taken care of, because this is a world of mathematically precise laws of nature where we perform, we do something, we set up a cause in motion and its effects are guaranteed. So with this background, let us consider what is duty. The best definition of duty we find in HPP's writing in Keto Theosophy, where she says, duty is that which is due to humanity, especially to those who are less fortunate than us. And look at the importance of this. If this performance of duty is neglected, then we will be, in the future lives, we will become spiritually insolvent and moral bankrupts, she says. That is the great danger of neglect of duties. And this whole idea of duty and its performance by each individual rests on the idea which we considered earlier, that there is a certain moral order in the universe. The universe is not merely a mechanical clock, neither is man merely a digesting machine, as HPP quotes one of the scientists in IC Sunway. Man is not merely a digesting machine, and universe is not merely a mechanical arrangement of things, but there is a moral nature in universe as well as man. There is a moral aspect of nature, and this must be ever kept in mind. So this order of universe was called by ancient Vedic teachers as dharma. Dharma is not religion. It is very clearly, we can understand this by studying what dharma is. Dharma is not religion, it is not rituals, it is not tradition. It means, or rather it comes from the word, one of the etymology of the word dharma is from the word dhri, which means to hold or to sustain. In other words, there is a moral order in the universe which sustains the whole universe, which sustains the world, which sustains all sentient beings. Very nicely expressed in Light of Asia, in Book the 8th, this law, this order is mentioned. I quote, "It seeth everywhere and marketh all. Do right, it recompenseth. Do one wrong, the equal retribution must be made, though dharma tarry long. It knows not wrath nor pardon. Utter true, its measures meet. Its faultless balance weighs. Times are as naught. Tomorrow it will judge, or after many days. Such is the law which moves to righteousness, which none at last can turn aside or stick. The heart of it is love, the end of it is peace and consummation sweet. Obey." Unquote. So Buddha very Edwin Arnold very poetically has expressed the teachings of Lord Buddha of this fundamental idea which is missing in the world today, that there is a moral order in the universe. And simply put, duty is maintaining this moral order. There is a law which moves to righteousness, as Lord Buddha says, and maintaining this order, this harmony, living in accordance with it is duty. I found a nice definition of the word dharma online, and it seems that Sage Kanada in his Vaisheshika Sutras defines what is dharma. Let's consider that very nice verse. He says, yato abhyudaya nishreyasa siddhihi sa dharma, which means that which leads to attainment of abhyudaya, which is highest prosperity, and nishreyasa, which is total cessation of pain and attainment of the highest bliss, that is dharma. So yato abhyudaya nishreyasa siddhihi sa dharma. So we can understand it this way. There are laws of physical health. What happens if we overeat? We disturb the laws of physical health, and it leads to ill health. Then there is pain, and through pain and readjustment we'll have to regain our health. On the other hand, if we undernourish ourselves, the same thing happens. We disturb the balance which is there, which is because of the laws of health, laws of physical health. And again, through pain and readjustment, we'll have to restore our health back. Bad posture again gives rise to problems, and we'll have to restore the health back, and so on and so forth. Similarly also, taking the same analogy, there is a moral order in the universe, and if our thoughts, if our feelings and our speech and action, all of which arise from the basic ideas that we hold about life, the knowledge that we have, if this is not in accordance with this moral order or dharma, then we create a disturbance. And the restoration of disturbance, restoration from disturbance to harmony has to happen, because as Lord Buddha says, a mighty law which none can stay moves towards this great grand aim. And the restoration, the process of restoration, is what we feel as pain, sorrow and suffering, all of which arising from our ignorance and our actions based on our ignorance. So our individual suffering and collectively as a family and as a society and mankind as a whole, the physical suffering, the mental, the emotional, the moral, social, economical, anything that you take, all of this arises from one common source, which is neglect of duties. Neglect of duties. If we do this, then we are breaking the moral order, and then the adjustment process is painful. So those who had the knowledge of these laws which underlie the universe always insisted on sacrifice of and self-discipline and discipline of one's personal self for the good of all beings. Because the primary idea underlying all this is that there is no separateness. There is no separateness. Therefore, the ancients prescribed 5 yagnas or sacrifices which has to be performed. Let me just read this from the Doctrine of the Bhagavad Gita lectures by Pandit Bhavani Shankar. He mentions the 5 yagnas and explains them. Let's consider this from his writings. Bhuta Yagna. The aspirant develops the virtues of compassion and kindness towards the animal world. Narayagna. He will maintain and establish harmony and goodwill in his relation towards men in their social and religious life, inasmuch as his thoughts and actions affect his fellows as a member of the body politic, either for good or evil. Pitriyagna. He will be enabled to have better bodies from the Pitris, whose function it is to provide necessary instruments for his evolution. Devayagna. The powers of his consciousness are harmonized to their sources in the macrocosm, and the center, the self, is thus harmonized with the tattvas and their presiding intelligences. And finally, Brahmayagna, that is, study of the scriptures which deal with the great truths revealed by the great rishis, and by meditating on them for the purpose of helping humanity. Now, if we contemplate on these different sacrifices mentioned by the ancient rishis, we find that underlying all this is the idea of obligation that each being has towards everybody, all beings around himself. Every moment of his life, there are two paths which open up before him. One is the path of what is pleasant to him. That is what is, that is what is encouraged by the personal, selfish, illusive idea of self, illusive self. That encourages choosing the path of what is pleasant, what is pleasurable. But there is another path, which is the path of what is right, the path of what is virtuous, irrespective of whether it brings personal sorrow or personal trouble or uncomfortableness. So what he chooses, as he chooses, so will be his future, and so will he face the consequences of it in the future. So these yagnas, these duties which have to be performed, are the only saviors of man. In this universe which is governed by rigid justice, what is it that saves a man? What is it which is his only safeguard? The answer to which we find in the story which we all know, which comes in Mahabharata, where Yudhishthira is posed few questions by Yaksha, which is actually Yama himself, in the guise of Yaksha. And then Yudhishthira gives perfect answers to all the questions which Yaksha poses. Then Yaksha grants him a boon, saying that one of your brothers, who are already dead by drinking the waters from the lake when they were not supposed to drink, one of them can be revived to life. Whom do you choose? You can choose whom you want. So Yudhishthira immediately chooses Nakula. So Yaksha asks him, see, your dearest brother is Bhima, and he has the power of 16,000 elephants. He can protect you from any danger, any time in life. Why don't you choose him? And why don't you choose Arjuna, who is a great warrior, and he'll be a protection for you in any warfare. Why don't you choose him? Why don't you choose Bhima, or why don't you choose Arjuna? Then Yudhishthira gives the reason for choosing Nakula, which is in accordance with Dharma. And then he answers Yaksha that the only savior of mankind, the only savior of a being is neither Arjuna nor Bhima or anything else in the world, but the only savior, the only protector is Dharma. So we find, say, he who protects Dharma will be protected by Dharma. So we can understand the meaning of this saying Dharmo Rakshate Rakshita when we understand the philosophy behind it, when we understand the scientific basis behind it, which is that world is not chaos, the universe is not chaos, but the universe is not purposeless, meaningless collection of objects, but there is a definite end and aim towards which all beings are evolving, which follows the law which Lord Buddha mentions, a law which moves to righteousness. And one who aligns himself with this law, with the workings of this law, sacrificing his personal likes and dislikes, or in other words, one who performs the duties of life, one who performs the obligatory duties of life, what he owes to all, the whole of the sentient universe, naturally his happiness and his security is taken care of. The famous verse in Bhagavad Gita, which we all know, that yogakshemam vahamyaham, which means security, prosperity, happiness, all this is there where Krishna is there, and Krishna representing the divinity within oneself. So when we perform the duties of life, then everything that is necessary for us is taken care of. We need not ask for it, we need not fight for it. There is a beautiful verse in the New Testament which says, seek you first the kingdom of heaven, everything else will be added unto it. So the highest duty is to seek the kingdom of heaven, which is that divinity which is within oneself and the same divinity which is reflected in all beings. Service of that divinity is the highest duty, and once this is done, then all other things naturally fall in its place. But once this is forgotten, and once the voice of one's lower self, which is based in selfishness and greed and self-centered thinking, once we give in to that voice, then everything becomes chaotic and everything appears confusing and everything will be out of its place. And we find at every stage of life, we find obstacles, we find sorrow, we find disappointments, instead of seeing reason and meaning and a true happiness which comes from the knowledge of that kingdom of heaven which has to be sought. So that's the problem of the world and all of us, that all the three gates of hell which Krishna mentions in one of the chapters of the Gita is widely flung open for us. We have widely opened up all the three gates of hell and we are rushing towards it, because this simple philosophy of unity is forgotten. All the religious institutions and science, on the other hand, does not recognize this one unifying philosophy which speaks of the one unifying self within all beings. So this unifying idea, this idea of unity, of homogeneity, is forgotten, and then it is like a Tower of Babel, everybody speaking different languages, full of confusion. So we should remember what that Brahma Yajna mentions, what Brahma Yajna says, which is study of scriptures. That is the beginning point, study of scriptures. Because why do we neglect our duties? Why do we do something which is not in line with what gives us true happiness and what brings about peace and harmony in the world? Why do we do this? Because we are not aware of what is right and wrong. As a very nice definition of ignorance mentioned in the yoga aphorisms, ignorance is confusion of what is true with what is untrue, what is good with what is bad, what is not soul with what is soul, and what is beautiful with what is ugly. This confusion happens because of the lack of knowledge, lack of discrimination which arises from knowledge. So, now applying all these ideas to our personal life, what do we find? We find that since the whole world is, whole universe is not result of chance and accident, but is a result of perfect law, firstly. And secondly, there is a definite direction in which the whole of universe is evolving towards. And thirdly, there is no other external God or external being who will dictate what will happen on earth and what will happen in our life, but we ourselves who are setting causes and either getting bound by it or getting unfettering ourselves from bondage. Remembering these things, we find that we are placed exactly in that position in life, in that station of life, where, from where alone, working through which our further evolution is possible. We find that nothing is by chance, nothing is by accident, what happens in our life. Which means that all the opportunities of our life, as well as the so-called misfortunes, the people whom we meet who help us or hinder us, who trouble us or who becomes our friends, as also the various complexities of life that we find, wherein each individual's life is distinct and different from all others' lives in terms of the opportunities, in terms of the faculties that he has, in terms of his mental power and his faculties and so on and so forth, the family in which he is born and how it affects him adversely or beneficently. All these are not the result of chance, but are the direct result only of his own thoughts, words and actions in the past. So our life is a result of our past. What were the causes which we have generated in the past has resulted in this present life, and therefore it is in the present station of life where we are placed that our duties lie. This law, intelligent law, which Lord Buddha mentions, is perfect wisdom itself, perfect harmony, and we are placed exactly among those set of people, among that nation, in that point of time in the history of mankind, where our duties lie. So there is an obligation that we have to perform, and unless the duty is discharged, we are bound with these beings. So the idea of renouncing, so to say, in quotes, idea of renouncing this family life and going away to monastery or to Himalayas and so on is absolutely faulty. And we found that, you know, we clearly see that when Krishna mentions that in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So we have duties which we can easily recognize. We have duty as a son and or a daughter, duty as husband or a wife, as an employee or an employer, as a citizen, and various obligatory duties that we have to perform in our life in every day. But amongst all this, what we must remember is what P.P. Vadiyaji once said in his, one of his writings, that he says, punctuality in time, accuracy in space, and thirdly, purity of causation. Punctuality in time, accuracy in space, and purity of causation. This is what has to be performed while we are in the midst of doing all the other duties of life. You know, what we all, many of us, miss out when we consider what is yoga is that there are universal great duties which all beings have to perform. Sage Patanjali mentions that in his Yoga Aphorisms, which I will read now. He says, forbearance consists in not killing, veracity, not stealing, continence, and not coveting. Five things. Then he says, this is important, these, without respect to rank, place, time, or compact, are the universal great duties. So these are not, these five things mentioned are not only for yogis or those who are spiritual aspirants, but for the common man. These are the things that we have to practice while we are engaged in all the other duties of life. These are the virtues that we have to develop, and these are the this should be the mental framework and our character through which we perform all the other duties of life. Let us recollect what they are again: not killing, veracity, not stealing, continence, and not coveting. Let us remember these. And in many places, in some places in the Mahabharata also, it seems, it is mentioned that ahimsa is the greatest dharma. So if we remember the first two of the five which are mentioned in the Yoga Aphorisms, which is ahimsa and satya, then the other three naturally follows from ahimsa and satya. And these are the two things which must be always kept in mind and must be applied in our daily life, in our relation to our fellow men, and while performing all the other obligatory duties. So we find great encouragement when Krishna says that, you see, it is natural that we cannot at once start practicing developing these virtues completely in us and start practicing them. But Krishna gives great encouragement. He says to Arjuna in the 18th chapter that a man's own natural duty, he says, and these are the natural duties. The very fact that we are human beings implies that there are human duties, and these are the ones, these five virtues that are mentioned. A man's own natural duty, even though stained with faults, ought not to be abandoned. For all human acts are involved in faults, as the fire is wrapped in smoke. The highest perfection of freedom from action is attained through renunciation by him who in all works has an unfettered mind and subdued heart. So he says that even though it is tainted with faults, even though we have not reached the state of perfectly doing our duties, it ought not to be abandoned. This ought not to be abandoned, but should be pursued, and gradually we will become better at this. So let's stop here by remembering one final idea, that the various duties that we have to perform in the various roles that we have taken up in life as an employer, husband, wife, so on and so forth, all the duties that we have to do there in the way mentioned by Krishna in the third chapter, which is doing all these actions as duties with mind unfettered by the results, with mind undisturbed by the result, with the mind unattached to the fruits of these actions. Let us remember that all these duties are but avenues and opportunities for us to do that one great duty, which is the duty to our higher self, the duty to that one self, that one spiritual self, which is reflected in all beings and which we have to recognize in our fellow beings especially. And this understanding, this philosophy, this study of scriptures and its trying to exemplify those things will help us perform, you know, we will give us that rationale and that power to perform, power to exemplify the virtues of Ahimsa and Satya. So all these duties are not separate different things, but there is a one common thread which unites all this, which is the duty to our higher self, the duty to that God within, which is our actual true essence. So we can take up, we'll take up any questions or any points for consideration.
Mahabharata episode, did
Yudhishthira
explain why he chose Nakula?
Yes, he does. He says that the first three sons are born to Kunti, so Yudhishthira is anyway alive. So Kunti has her compensation, so to say. Though two sons are dead, Kunti has Yudhishthira as a son. And Madri Devi, right? Mm-hmm. Madri Devi, who is the second of Pandu, she won't have a son, and it will be wrong on his part to choose what is pleasant to him, which is his own brothers, Bhima or Arjuna, choosing what is pleasant to him and not doing the duty towards Madri Devi. So he chooses that Nakula should be revived. One of the other, it seems Mahabharata is also known as Manava Kartavya Shastra, the duty of man, the Shastra which speaks of the duty of man, and that is so true.